ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतः पदकमलम् श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदा सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्त काञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्णा आई एम वेरी ग्रेटफुल to have been given this opportunity to speak a few words on Mother Ganga. Very grateful to Madhavanand Prabhu for having invited me to speak. So, after seeing this beautiful drama on the appearance of Mother Ganga, there is not much left to be said. So, I think we should end the talk here. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. But just because we need to keep ourselves engaged for the next one hour or so, I'll try to speak something. So, this particular story that we saw in the form of this drama, I would like to narrate it slightly in a different way, as it is seen in the pages of the Valmiki Ramayana, but also with some understanding from our personal lives, what we can learn from this story. And of course, the glory of Mother Ganga that appears from this story. In addition to that, I would like to also speak today about certain pastimes of Mother Ganga, which are very special in nature. One of the pastimes is about who is Mother Ganga. We know that she descended, you know, and Lord Shiva held it and all that. But who is this personality actually, you know? We will see that. And then we'll also see the power of Mother Ganga, the efficacy of Mother Ganga. Why do we say that Mother Ganga is worshipable? What is really her potency? We will see that. You know, in addition to all this, we will also see seven things about what Ganga has to teach us in our personal lives. That is what we will see towards the end. And some of these stories and some of these pastimes that we are going to narrate are going to teach us these seven lessons that Mother Ganga actually brings us and, you know, teaches us in our personal lives. So, this particular story, it begins with Himavan, the king of the mountains. He married a lady whose name was Manorama. She was the daughter of Mount Meru. So Himavan was the king of the mountains and he married Manorama. their union brought two extremely beautiful girls into this world, one whose name was Ganga and another whose name was Uma. So Ganga, the beauty of Mother Ganga and the personality of Ganga was so amazingly dazzling that the demigods from the heavenly planets, they came to Himavan and asked him to give his daughter to serve in the heavenly planets as a celestial river. So Himavan sent Ganga to the heavens, and she remained in the heavens as Mandakini Ganga. And Uma, she performed extreme amount of austerities to have Lord Shiva as her husband. And then the union of Shiva and Uma produced Kartikeyi. On the earth, something else was happening. There was a king whose name was Sagara. He was one of the most illustrious kings in the Ikshvaku lineage, the solar dynasty. So Sagara had two wives, one whose name was Keshini and another whose name was Sumati. Sagara, his wives Keshini and Sumati, together performed huge amount of tapasya in the north, in the Himalayan region. And as a result of performing so much of tapasya, Bhrigumuni, one of the exalted personalities and expansion of Lord Shiva himself, he appeared to these three personalities and he gave them benedictions. So essentially he gave two benedictions. One was, he gave Keshini a son whose name was Asmanjas. And he gave Sumati, not one, 60,000 sons. Looks 1:60,000, quite out of proportion. So anyways, the sons were born. But something interesting happened in the life of Asmanjas. So he got a very special type of disease of the mind, as a result of which he actually became almost like a psychiatric. You must have heard of serial killers who randomly kill people and don't know why they killed. He happened to be one of those, that category. And his favorite style of killing was that, and his favorite target was that he had soft targets, babies. He would catch babies and throw them into the river. He would hold the babies into the river with their legs till they drown. This man, he became a maniac practically. Practically like a maniac. Just killing randomly. So, Sagara, when he realized that his son is really going out of control, he tried his best to drive some sense into his son, but he just couldn't. And at some point of time, he realized this cannot continue. The king being just wild like that. Sometimes decisions have to be taken in life not based on what I think is good for me, but what I think is good for the world. Especially in situations of leadership where your every action is going to lead to huge amount of implications on the world, then your every action has to be counted for. So Sagara, he realized, if I allow my son Asmanjas to become the king, he will become a tyrant. And the whole dynasty, the solar dynasty, Ikshvaku dynasty, which is known for kings who are spotlessly clean, kings who are absolutely following the dharmic codes, so what, the grace of the dynasty just gets spoiled. So Sagara took a very tough call. He threw his son Asmanjas out of his kingdom into the forest and just left him over there and came back. Now you might say, how did he do this to his own son? Sagara realized that he didn't have one son and he didn't have 60,000 sons. he had millions of sons. Because the king is the father of the world. The leader is the father of an entire nation. Naturally being responsible, he cannot be favoring his own son. The entire war of Mahabharat happened because one man continued to favor his son, who was as crazy as this, as wild as this, and as maniac as this. The two stories, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, actually talk about two kings like this, who took two different decisions based on the behavior of their sons. Sagara decided to banish his son, throw him into the forest, not allow him to have the power and facility to indiscriminately kill, but at the same time allow him to continue living whatever his destiny was. Dhritarashtra allowed his son to live within the palace, within the kingdom, and continue all his atrocities, just tolerating, just keeping quiet. And the result was totally different. Just because Asmanjas was thrown out, the kingdom was so peaceful. Things were so amazingly great. So, the son of Asmanjas, his name was Anshuman. So, Anshuman was exactly opposite of his father. Extremely diligent, extremely kind-hearted, and extremely capable. So, he was appointed as the next heir to the throne. Sagara, at some point, he realized that he has done a lot, but he wanted to do one final act of welfare to the world before he retires. He decided to perform the Ashwamedha Yajna, the horse sacrifice. He started the Ashwamedha Yajna with full pomp, and everything was going on perfectly fine. Till, in every story, there is a twist. And the twist is always at the time when things are going perfectly fine. That's how life is. If life didn't have these twists and turns, you could get really bored of life. Right? So, there is fun in twists and turns, but at the same time, there can be horror in twists and turns. Sagara was almost on the verge of completing the sacrifice that he had started, the Ashwamedha Yajna. This was going to become the pinnacle of his success, the pinnacle of his contribution to society. And at that point of time, Indra, the king of the heavens, he became insecure. Insecurity is not a disease in only employees of today's world. In today's world, people don't know how long their jobs will last. They're always insecure. Even an employer can become insecure because you don't know when the company can get closed. The king of the heavens can get insecure because he doesn't know who will take over my seat. So insecurity is practically the trend in the material world. Satisfaction is a trend in the spiritual world. So when we cultivate this quality of satisfaction in our lives, we are living in the spiritual consciousness. And when we cultivate the quality of insecurity in our lives, we are living in the heavenly planets, which is highly insecure. There is enjoyment, but the enjoyment is almost always filled with simultaneous, you know, insecurities. Just like a small bird, if you watch a small bird eating grains, just before eating those grains, you should see how many times it turns here and there to find out if there is any danger, you know. That's the kind of insecurity that is there in the world, as long as there is attachment to that grain. So Indra was heavily insecure about his seat, and naturally he realized that Sagara is attempting to do an Ashwamedha Yajna. And any Ashwamedha Yajna, when successful, naturally the person feels like doing one more Yajna, and he will feel like doing one more Yajna, and he will feel like doing 99 Yajnas, and then he will do 100 Yajnas, then he will become the king of the heaven. So Indra said, why to allow it to go to 99? Let me stop it at one only. So he stole the horse. And Sagara and his sons, they were in extreme amount of anxiety, you know, about the horse. So Sagara, when the horse was missing, he was extremely upset. And he told his 60,000 sons to go and find the horse. The 60,000 sons of Sagara, with intense enthusiasm to satisfy the desire of their father and dedication to find that horse, they went out. They created a havoc in the world. You know, when you ransack somebody's house, how do you do it? You pull drawers, you empty things over here and there, open cupboards, throw everything here and there. They did that with the earth. They didn't know where the horse was. So they practically started digging randomly here and there to find out where the horse went, you know. After searching the surface of the earth, these people started going inside the earth. They started the first mining companies, searching for gold, searching for the horse that could give them, you know, the experience of gold. And they created so many craters around the entire world that practically kilometers and kilometers of earth was just huge craters. So finally, after searching high and low, they finally found the horse standing peacefully in one place. Now this was too much for them, you know. They were like sweating so much and they were like struggling so much, and this horse is just standing like that. Worst, the horse was standing there, and next to it there was one sage whose name was Kapila Muni, sitting peacefully and meditating as if nothing happened. Now they felt that their calculation was that a thief should be ashamed of what act he is doing. At least he should be trying to hide. At least he should be trying to, you know, defend himself. And here was Kapila Muni, who was just peacefully sitting there. So Sagara and, the 60,000 sons of Sagara, they got extremely angry on Kapila Muni and they ran towards him to attack him, to destroy him. As soon as they ran towards Kapila to destroy him, Kapila opened his eyes. And just by opening his eyes, the 60,000 sons, they were converted to ashes. If you have ever heard of electric cemeteries, you put the body in and ashes come out. So Kapila Muni, he just burnt all of them into ashes. The sons of 60,000 sons of Sagara, they took their decision just based on haste. They did not think whether this person has stolen the horse or no. They just equated two and two. Horse is standing there and he is sitting peacefully. That means he is the thief. You know. So many decisions in life, many judgments in life, we take just based on our thinking that this has to be right. Our calculation that this has to be right. Naturally, many times we may end up being wrong. One time there was a man who was a woodcutter. So he would every day go out to cut wood. One day he was trying to search for his axe to go and cut wood. While he was searching for the axe, he just couldn't find his axe anywhere in the house. He searched all over his house, he couldn't find the axe at all. Something similar to the 60,000 sons, they're searching for the horse. He couldn't find the axe. He came out of his house. As soon as he came out of his house, he saw one young boy standing, neighbor's son. And when he saw his eyes, this man, he could see guilt in his eyes. This man said, "I am sure this boy has stolen my axe. Just see, I can see guilt in his eyes." But he didn't have any proof, so he couldn't say anything. So he had decided to catch him red-handed. So he went inside his house and, you know, he didn't go out to cut that day. The next day morning, randomly he found his axe. He had kept it somewhere and he forgot it. And he forgot to search over there. He found that axe. He came out. The same boy was standing outside. Now when he looked at his face, that guilt had gone. Guilt had vanished. The question now is, was the guilt there or was it not there? Many times when we look at people, we judge them based on what we want to see in them. Our decisions about who they are or how they behave are based on how we think they should be. So we most of the times have a preconceived notion about people, and we want to prove that that preconceived notion is correct. So the sons of Sagara, they had a preconceived notion about Kapila, and they got destroyed. So haste sometimes converts kings into ashes. So Sagara, when he came to know that his 60,000 sons were burned to ashes, he sent Anshuman, his grandson, to find his uncles and to see if he can help them. So Anshuman went over there and he saw there were just 60,000 heaps of ashes all over that place. Now he couldn't believe that his powerful uncles were turned into these 60,000 mounds of ashes. He didn't know what to do now. But he knew that these people are suffering in that situation. He knew that I have to do something to deliver them from, you know, the situation they were. So at that point of time when he was trying to contemplate on what to do, Garuda, the bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, appeared. And Garuda, he told Anshuman that don't worry about your 60,000 uncles. First take the horse back, complete the horse sacrifice. That's important. After you complete the horse sacrifice, then in order to deliver your uncles of the sin that they performed, not just of offending Kapila Muni, but also of destroying the entire earth, you know, digging it up so badly, you know. So when we barge into anybody's life, when we barge into others' property, when we misuse Krishna's property, in a way we feel is right, there is some reaction waiting for us. So the 60,000 sons of Sagara, they wanted to please their father, they wanted to complete their sacrifice. But at the same time, they didn't understand, they didn't realize what kind of destruction they are causing to the earth, what kind of imbalance they are causing to the world. Today's world, we find, why is Mother Ganga polluted? Why is the Yamuna polluted? Because people want to use the resources of the earth to pull out, to satisfy their own needs, to increase their own wealth. They do not care if an entire river can get polluted. They do not care if millions of cattle, millions of, you know, birds, millions of fishes on the way are dying. They do not care if villages are being flooded with only polluted water. They don't care for all that. All they care for is that their pocket gets filled. And naturally, a reaction is waiting for them. So, Garuda told Anshuman that only the Ganga can purify them, can deliver them from this sin that they have done. So Anshuman went back with the horse. Sagara completed his horse sacrifice. And after the completion of the horse sacrifice, Sagara retired. Anshuman, all his life, he continued struggling to somehow or the other help Ganga descend. But he couldn't do much. His son, Dilipa, he continued the struggle. Whole life, tried to get the Ganga to come to save his ancestors. Nothing happened. The son of Dilipa, Bhagiratha, he came and he continued the mission that his father, his grandfather and his great-grandfathers had started. Ganga mission has been going on many times. So, it's natural that the cycle will continue. But, there have been people who have been successful in Ganga mission. That is a hope for us. Few generations may not be successful. That's fine. As long as you don't give up, the Ganga mission will not fail. So somebody has to do it at some point. But who can do it? Somebody like Bhagirath, who has the combination of pure intentions, but along with that, determined action. Bhagirath just did not contemplate, just did not feel, mujhe saaf karna hai Ganga ko, aur mujhe Ganga ko niche leke aana hai, mere purvajon ke jo astiyan hai, usko saaf karna hai, you know. That was not his only thought. He was contemplating on it definitely, but more than that, he was really acting on it. So, Bhagiratha, he went to Gokarna, in the Himalayas, and he performed intense tapasya to please Lord Brahma. After years and years of intense tapasya, Brahmaji was pleased, and Brahmaji appeared in front of him. And he told him that, I will fulfill your desire on one condition, that for Ganga to descend, there has to be somebody who can hold the power of her descent. So he said, you please Lord Shiva. Once Lord Shiva is pleased and he is ready to accept the power of Ganga's descent, then, you know, I'll send Mother Ganga. In spiritual life, one always needs people who are intermediaries to be able to hand over the power which is actually unhandleable for regular people. So in spiritual life, most people in the regular world want direct connection. Whether it is to some film star, whether it is to some celebrity, and whether it is to God. ये बीच में क्या है लोग इतने सारे मेरे को डायरेक्ट कनेक्शन चाहिए कृष्ण से बीच में कोई नहीं चाहिए मैं और कृष्ण बस दैट्स अ प्रॉब्लम यू नो व्हाई बिकॉज द पावर ऑफ दीज पर्सनैलिटीज इज सो इंटेंस दैट कंडीशन सोल्स कैन नॉट हैंडल देम कृष्ण इज सो प्योर दैट हूएवर यू आर कृष्णस प्यूरिटी इज टू मच फॉर यू टू हैंडल ऑन अ पर्सनल लेवल So you need via medias who can, just like, you know, sometimes you go to villages and you find, you hear this sound, the humming sound of electricity, 25,000 volts. Now, can you imagine, you put your mobile for charging over there. Kya hoga mobile ka? So that's the problem, you know. So that device cannot handle that power. So similarly, our capacity to handle power is so limited. So naturally, we need people who can reduce it to the level we can handle. So Lord Shiva, he acted as the first person who received the power of the Mother Ganga and sent it in a way that the world could handle. The Mahamantra, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is such a powerful mantra. If you just directly, it descends from Golok Vrindavan. But for us to be able to handle that mantra, we need it to come from the mouth of pure devotees. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he waited for Ishwaripuri to give him the mantra before he started preaching it to the world. So, these personalities who act as via medias are as important as the mantra itself, as important as Ganga herself. So Lord Shiva was pleased with Bhagirath's devotion and he agreed to come. And the Ganga descended and straight it descended on the dreadlocks of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva divided some kind of circulation system, I don't know. But he divided the Ganga into six streams, you know. Six streams came out from the locks of Lord Shiva and they entered into the Bindu lake. And then there was a seventh stream that followed Bhagirath. So the condition was that Mother Ganga had previously told him that she would follow Bhagirath wherever he goes. So he has to tread the path. So can you imagine what a responsibility he had of treading the path of Ganga? So he made sure he covered all those areas that needed her. And naturally he wanted to cover that area where he needed her. So, as Bhagirath passed, his chariot was passing, Ganga was flowing with rapid pace. Anything on the way of the Ganga became off Ganga. And Bhagirath was going on and on and on. As he approached closer to where his ancestors' ashes were, he became a little excited. And in his excitement, he made one mistake. He passed through the hermitage of Janu Muni. And very soon, the hermitage was missing. Janu Muni got extremely angry at, you know, Bhagirath. How dare he take my hermitage? And Janamuni found a solution for it. He drank the whole Ganga. So now suddenly Bhagiratha is going ahead with full pace, you know, to reach his ancestors. Piche Ganga hi gaya hai. So he got shocked. He said, how can, I mean, we can understand if a water bottle goes missing or something, you know. But if a river goes missing, you know, how do you interpret it, you know. So Bhagiratha was shocked. He realized that somebody powerful has done something. And he turned back and he saw Janamuni standing peacefully. Even after you fast on a Nirjal Ekadasi day, you can't drink a river. You can drink few liters of water, you know. And Janamuni, I don't know whether he was fasting or no, but he definitely drank the river, you know. And Bhagirath ran to Janamuni, fell at his feet and started begging him, started, you know, pleading him for forgiveness. Of course, Janamuni conceded. And Janamuni had a unique way of letting the river out. Of course, he couldn't, you know, let the river out in the regular way. So he let the river out of his ears. And from, because Ganga came out from his ears, she was technically born from him. So her name also happened to be Janavi. So, you know, he continued. What we can learn from here is that when one focuses on one's goal, and while one is on the path of success, you could ignore some minor details. And those minor details could prevent you from reaching your success. So Bhagirath was intensely focused on his goal of reaching the 60,000 uncles of his, ancestors of his. That was his goal, that was his focus. And he was almost there. And in the midst of reaching there, he forgot one minor detail. The Janamuni ashram was there. But that minor detail probably could have costed him his whole episode, whole goal itself. So anyways, finally Ganga reached the ashes of Bhagirath's ancestors. And as soon as Ganga touched the ashes of Bhagirath's ancestors, in front of Bhagirath's eyes, he could see all his ancestors smiling and ascending through the spiritual world in front of his own eyes. Can you imagine the satisfaction of, you know, Bhagirath? What has been the struggle for so many generations finally happened. So, Mother Ganga is, this is one of the stories of the descent of Mother Ganga. There are many stories to the descent of Mother Ganga. Now, if you find so many stories, don't get bewildered. Accept all of them as true. Accept all of them as happening at different yugas. So, another story is a very interesting type of story. I'll tell two other stories and then we will discuss the other story of how Mother Ganga descended to the earth. This is a story about how Mother Ganga actually appeared for the first time in the creation of the Lord. This story is from the Brahma Vaivarta Puran, and this happened during the month of Kartik. And during the month of Kartik in Vrindavan, in the Rasasthali, Krishna was celebrating a festival honoring Srimati Radharani. And in this festival, all the demigods were invited. All the demigods were there in the festival, commemorating and honoring Srimati Radharani. So Saraswati was singing a beautiful song, and her song was so mesmerizing that Lord Brahma, after her song, he gave her a pearl necklace as a reward. Lord Shiva gave her a, you know, jewel necklace. And then, you know, everyone asked Lord Shiva to sing. Then Lord Shiva started singing for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. And as Shiva was singing, his singing was so melodious and so soothing that practically everybody was captured by the sound emitted from Lord Shiva's throat. And at some point of time, when they actually gained consciousness and they saw what's happening, they opened their eyes and saw that Radha and Krishna were missing. Just disappeared. And the whole area where they were was filled with water. They couldn't understand where did Radha and Krishna go. And then suddenly they heard a voice and Krishna spoke to all of them. Krishna said that myself and Srimati Radharani, we have transformed ourselves into this liquid water. And this is going to be known as Ganga. And all the demigods started praying to them to appear again. So Krishna said that I will appear again on one condition. And he said, the condition is that Lord Shiva should write the Tantra Shastra. Only if he promises that he will write the Tantra Shastra, I will appear again. And the Lord Shiva, he took the water of the Ganga and took a sankalpa that he will write the Tantra Shastra. And as soon as he took the sankalpa, Krishna and Radharani appeared again. So, from this perspective, Mother Ganga is non-different from the body of Radha and Krishna, actually, descending from Golok Vrindavan. In the Stala Puran, there is another very interesting story about Ganga also. One time, Parvati Devi, this is in Kailash, Parvati Devi, just sort of a playful attitude, she came to her husband and closed his eyes. She closed the eyes of Lord Shiva. And as soon as she closed the eyes of Lord Shiva, the sun disappeared. The moon disappeared. And all the fire in the world stopped. So practically, everybody in the world started trembling. What's happening? Lord Shiva's third eye opened up. And the sun came, the moon came, and the fire started. But Parvati Devi, she started perspiring, sweating like anything. And, you know, this perspiration of Parvati Devi eventually became Ganga. And the perspiration was so intense that practically Shiva had to hold the flow of the perspiration on his jata. And then eventually he released it on the request of Brahmaji. He released it, a little bit of it, in the Brahmaloka, in the form of Manasitirtha. It became known as Manasitirtha. And he released a little bit of it in the heavenly planets. It came to be known as Mandakini Ganga. So, from this perspective, if you see, there is another story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which talks about how Ganga descended to this world. This story is of Bali Maharaj and Vamanadev. When Bali promised 3 steps of land to Lord Vamanadev, Vamanadev extended his feet. And his feet, you know, became so elongated, that it touched the outer covering of the universe, the shell of the universe, the Brahmanda. And as soon as Lord Vamanadev's feet touched the shell broke open. That shell is not like a, you know, some egg shell or something like that. That shell has, just the shell, the dimension of the shell is millions of kilometers. And just with a touch of Vamanadeva's toe, it just cracked. And the causal ocean that is outside, the ocean, the milk ocean, it started flowing into the Brahmanda, you know, into the universe. And first of all, it washed the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadeva. And when it was flowing lower and lower and lower, the water, you know, so it naturally fell on the Brahmaloka first. And then it started flowing lower and lower and lower, it came to the heavenly planets. And then from the heavenly planets, it entered into the earth. So at that point of time, when the lotus feet of Lord Vamanadev, you know, just imagine, just even if you try to imagine it, it's so difficult to imagine, you know. Somebody standing here only, but his leg is reaching everywhere, you know. So, I mean, just imagine the surprise of the demigods. Itana bada pyar, बड़ा होता जा रहा है, बड़ा होता जा रहा है, यू नो, एंड द लेग इज रीचिंग सत्यलोक, क्रॉसिंग सत्यलोक एंड गोइंग हायर एंड हायर एंड हायर. सो ईच ऑफ दीज पर्सनैलिटीज हैड दे आर फोकस ऑन दैट लेग. गोपीनाथ लोटस फीट इज वॉट वी आर ऑल फोकसिंग ऑन, राइट? सो दिस लोटस फीट इज गोइंग कमिंग इन टू देयर होम्स. कैन यू इमेजिन? स्वर्ग के अंदर घुस गया भगवान का चरण कमल, थ्रू द हेवन्स, थ्रू सत्यलोक, थ्रू जनलोक, तपलोक, इट जस्ट वेंट हायर एंड हायर. एवरी पर्सनैलिटी दैट वॉन्टेड टू वर्शिप द लोटस फीट ऑफ द लॉर्ड, दे गॉट फुल चांस दैट डे ड्यू टू बलि महाराज ग्रेस. सो वेन ब्रह्माजी सॉ द लोटस फीट ऑफ द लॉर्ड, ही सेड दिस इज माई चांस, एंड ही टुक हिज कमंडलू and poured the water of the kamandalu on the lotus feet of the Lord. So the mixture of the causal ocean and the water from Brahmaji's kamandalu, when it falls on Lord Shiva's head in this world, then it comes down and descends as Mother Ganga. The combination of the power of Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva, that combined effect is what is known as Mother Ganga. The lotus feet of the Lord, the water from the Brahmaji's kamandalu, and water that has touched the head of Lord Shiva. What else can be used to explain the glory of Mother Ganga? So somebody who has a connection with all these three personalities, therefore there is no problem as far as Ganga is concerned. All parties are satisfied. The Shaivites are satisfied, descending from, you know, the head of Lord Shiva. The Vaishnavas are satisfied, descending from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And the few people who worship Lord Brahma, they are also satisfied that here is, this is integration. So therefore, Ganga is a river that integrates the entire country. The country may be divided for many reasons, but for one reason, the country always comes together. Ganga mission. So, there are many other stories that teach us about the greatness of Mother Ganga. One particular story is very interesting. This story is connected with Vritrasura. Of course, this story is also connected with the story that I spoke about the sons of Sagara. So here, Vritrasura, when he was killed by Lord Indra, Vritrasura is a powerful demon. He had a lot of followers. So those who have read Vritrasura's story, you might wonder what happened to all his followers, you know. Because he was a demon, he had a lot of followers, and the demigods only killed him. Baki log kidhar gaye? Chip gaye the. Kidhar? Samudra ke andar. So essentially what had happened was that, when Bhagiratha had brought Ganga, she, you know, purified the ancestors of Bhagirath. And then she went and filled up the ocean. So there is some understanding of it also, that the Ganga goes and meets the ocean. The ocean is also actually Ganga only. So basically, now all the oceans in the world were covered, and all this digging that the sons of Sagara did, they were all covered with water. So these demons who were friends of Vritrasura, after the death of Vritrasura, all of them went and hid inside the ocean. So they would stay inside the ocean all day long. And at night they would come out. You know. They would come out in the night and kill all the brahmanas. Kill, you know, destroy all the concept of Vedic culture. Anything that happens in the night essentially kills Vedic culture. Think about it from modern perspective, you know. So, nocturnal activity generally is not advised in Vedic culture. So here, the demons, they came out, they would come out in the night only, because they couldn't handle day, you know, because they didn't have the power to withstand the demigods. They would come out in the night, destroy a few villages, and then go back into the ocean. So now the demigods, they were extremely upset. How do you find them? They didn't even know who they were, they didn't even know where they came from and where they disappeared. So they went to Lord Narayan and asked him for help. So Lord Narayan told them, there is only one person in this world who can help you. And that is Agastya Muni. Many times the Lord directs somebody towards a saintly person. Why does the Lord direct somebody towards a saintly person? Because the access to Krishna, the access to God's powers is through representatives of God. So everything Krishna doesn't have to do personally. If it is something that nobody can do, that's when Krishna comes. Otherwise, he empowers some living entity to take up a role that is almost impossible to do. So when Lord Narayan told the demigods that Agastya Muni is the one who can help you, Agastya Muni, they went to the Agastya Muni and asked him, "Can you help us? We are not able to find these demons." Agastya Muni said, "Don't worry, I'll help you." And how did he help them? He drank the full ocean. So, then they found the demons sitting over there. Can you imagine the surprise of the demons? Suddenly, Pani Gayab. So they were like shocked. And they were all slaughtered, and all the demons were killed. And then the demigods went back to Agastya Muni and they told him that, "Please, can you fill the ocean back?" He said, "What ocean? I digested it." So Agastya Muni had that kind of capacity, So sometimes sadhus are dangerous. They have different types of capacities. So they asked him, "Come on." The demigod said, "How can you digest all this?" He said, "Ho gaya bas." Then he said, "What about the ocean now?" Then he told them, that's when this connection happens of Bhagirath Muni, Bhagirath's chariot. He said, "Very soon, Ganga will come and she will fill up the ocean again." And that's how the ocean eventually gets filled by the waters of the Ganga. So, we don't have to go so far to find Ganga. Ganga is here also, Chowpatty Beach. We can consider it to be my speculation, Vedic. There is a story in the Padma Puran, which happened in the junction of Treta Yuga and Dwapar Yuga, which actually talks about the glory of Mother Ganga in a very different way, in a way that we don't think of Ganga like this. So, at the junction of Treta Yuga and Dwapar Yuga, there was a king whose name was Satya Dharma. He had a wife whose name was Vijaya. And they lived together. They were very nice people, ruling the kingdom very justly. The king made one mistake in his life, and that mistake costed him practically everything else that he did. One day he was out on a hunting expedition, and while he was on a hunting expedition, he saw a tiger chasing a deer, and the tiger was desperately running after the deer, and the deer desperately was running away from the tiger. Finally, somehow or the other, the deer reached where the king was. And the deer literally took shelter of the king, seeking protection from the king. The king, rather than giving shelter to the deer, he took out a sword and cut her neck. Killed the deer mercilessly. So because this happened at the end of his life, the king and his wife both, they reached Yamaloka. And Yama, he sent them to such atrocious hells. There was one hell they sent him called as Vyagra Loka, something like that, So this is a hell where people who are in that hell, they are constantly eaten by tigers. So he was constantly being bitten and eaten. They're suffering like anything for quite some time. But then, because he did some pious deeds in his past, after the whole hellish holiday, they got their birth again in the material world. But the king and his wife both appeared as frogs, with full memory of whatever they have done in the past. So now, they were realized frogs. So sometimes you look at frogs sitting and closing their eyes in meditation, you don't know who they are, So these two were definitely realized frogs. I don't know about the others. So hibernation, maybe meditation, So these two frogs, they decided one thing in their life. Kuch bhi ho, हम गलती नहीं करेंगे और कुछ भी हो जीवन में एक बार गंगा स्नान करने के लिए जाएंगे. दे हैड देयर रियलाइजेशन फ्रॉम देयर पास्ट लाइव्स. सो दे फाउंड सम ग्रुप ऑफ साधुज हु आर गोइंग टू गंगा ऑन अ पिलग्रिमेज. सो दीज फ्रॉग्स दे जस्ट स्टार्टेड गोइंग बिहाइंड देम. ऑन द वे देयर वॉज अ यू नो व्हाट यू कॉल दैट चेक पोस्ट. यू नो पुलिस समटाइम्स स्टॉप बट द साधुज वेंट अहेड. द चेक पोस्ट ओनली फॉर द टू फ्रॉग्स. देयर वॉज अ स्नेक स्टैंडिंग देयर एंड द स्नेक सेड आई एम सॉरी योर यात्रा एंड्स हियर इन माई माउथ. देन द फ्रॉग स्टार्टेड टेलिंग द स्नेक अबाउट वॉट दे डिड इन देयर पास्ट लाइफ. द फ्रॉग सेड आई वॉज किंग सत्यधर्म इन माई पास्ट लाइफ एंड वन डियर टुक शेल्टर ऑफ मी एंड द डियर दैट टुक शेल्टर ऑफ मी आई किल्ड द डियर. नाउ वी बोथ आर टेकिंग शेल्टर ऑफ यू. इफ यू ईट अस देन यू विल ऑल्सो हैव टू सफर लाइक अस. एंड द स्नेक ऑल्सो वॉज अ फिलोसोफर. द स्नेक सेड कम ऑन डोंट यू नो दैट एवरी वाई डिड गॉड क्रिएट हंटर एंड अ प्रे अ प्रीडेटर एंड अ प्रे. इट्स गॉड्स क्रिएशन. आई एम अ स्नेक एंड यू आर अ फ्रॉग. आई एम अ हंटर एंड यू आर अ प्रे. सो यू आर माई नेचुरल फूड. And then the frog started telling the snake that don't you know the Paramatma within my heart and the Paramatma within your heart, what will they think if you eat me? The snake said, the Paramatma has created me as a snake and you as a frog, so I'm going to eat you. And eventually the dialogue ended by the snake eating both the frogs. But just before the snake ate both the frogs, both the frogs were loudly shouting out the name of Mother Ganga. Ganga, Ganga, they started shouting out and they gave up their bodies. And as soon as these two frogs were dead, the demigods from the heaven, led by Indra himself, he came with a chariot to take the atmas of these frogs to the heavenly planet. And it is explained in the Padma Puran that these people, they lived in the heavenly planets for a long period of time, and then from there they got to go to the spiritual world also. So that is the glory of just chanting the name of Mother Ganga, purifying agent. And where does Ganga get her power from? Because Ganga is non-different from Radha and Krishna. So as much as chanting the names of Radha and Krishna are purifying, chanting of the names of the devotees of the Lord are also purifying. Krishna, we chant Krishna's names. What does Krishna chant? Have you ever wondered? Krishna kaun sa mantra karte hai? Krishna also chants the holy names. But he chants the holy names of his devotees. In Vrindavan, every day he is calling out to all his cows. Shyamali, Dhavali, you know. These are the names of devotees. The cows of the devotees of the Lord. So Krishna is counting 9 lakh cows. He's actually chanting 9 lakh names of cows. So Krishna is busy in Namasmaran of his devotees, and the devotees are busy in Namasmaran of Krishna. So chanting the names of the devotees of Krishna is also purifying. So Ganga is definitely purifying in that way. So there is a very interesting episode that happens in Krishna's life connected to Mother Ganga. When Krishna killed Vatsasur, the calf demon, there was a demon who disguised himself as a calf and was roaming around in the group of Krishna. And Krishna realized, this calf is different. So if you are accustomed to being in goshalas, when there are calves which are really small, to differentiate between a bull and a cow, you look at their eyes. The way the shape of the eyes is, bulls, you know, the male ones, are a little naughty looking. You know, little ferocious looking, you know. They have a slight squint in their eyes. Certain type of feature that really shows them that they are different. And the cows have a little innocent type of feature. If you can just differentiate between calves and, you know, bulls in this way, can't Krishna differentiate between a demon and a calf? He can easily do it. So he just happened to find the difference, you know. So he caught the hind leg of the calf of Vatsasura and he swung the demon and it threw him. And Vatsasura just lost his life. All the gopas, the friends of Krishna, they didn't care it was a demon. They started telling Krishna, "Krishna, how can you kill a calf?" Krishna said, "No, it is not a calf, it is a demon." They said, "No, we will not play with you. You have killed a calf, you have done big sin. We will not play with you." First of all, he saved them. On top of that, these people are saying that, you know, we will not play with you because you have committed a sin. So this is God's dilemma. You know, many times God also has to go through dilemmas like this. Karo bhi bura, nahi karo bhi to bhi bura. You know. So if Krishna comes and helps us, then we say, why are you interfering in my life? And if Krishna stays away, why you say, why you stay away from my life? You know. So he has problems everywhere. So he knows how to solve his problems also, by the way. So Krishna, he asked the boys, "Okay, you want me to atone for the sin?" They said, "Yes." So he said, "How do I atone?" They said, "Go and have bath in Ganga. Then you will consider that you are free from sin." So Krishna said, "Okay." He said, "I will call the Ganga here." The boys started laughing. "How can you call Ganga here like that?" He said, "No, I will call Ganga anywhere." And then Ganga just invoked, Krishna just invoked the presence of Ganga. And then Ganga just poured out from his heart. And that particular form of Ganga is known as Manasi Ganga, the foothills of Govardhan Hill. The same Ganga that essentially came out from Krishna's personality, again came out. What is the big deal? Quantity is a problem with human calculations. But in divine calculation, quantity is never a problem. So it's not that Ganga ka stock khatam ho gaya Krishna ke paas. Ek bar chhod diya to ho gaya. He can always bring out Ganga anytime. So Ganga, Krishna had a bath in Manasi Ganga and he came out purified. One time Nanda Maharaj, he heard a story from somebody and he was fascinated by the story. He was so thrilled by the story that he actually wanted to go to Ganga to have a bath. And the story that he heard was that one time Garuda, he was catching a snake, fighting with a snake. And somehow, in the midst of the whole fight, you know, Garuda happened to pass through Ganga. And that last tip of the tail of the snake, it touched Ganga. And as soon as the tip of the tail of the snake touched Ganga, the snake lost his snake body and he got a four-handed form, practically. Then Garuda, he put that fellow on his back and took him to the spiritual world. The same person whom he had come to kill and fight, you know, he put him on his back and took him to the spiritual world. So when Nanda Maharaj heard this story, he was fascinated by this story. He said, "I want to go and have bath in Ganga." So Krishna said, "Come on, why do you need Ganga? Ganga is here, Manasi Ganga, you know." So none of the Brajavasis was ready to believe Krishna. And then Krishna prayed to Ganga Devi. And Ganga Devi personally appeared over there on her crocodile and gave darshan to all the Brajavasis. And from that time, that point of time, the Brajavasis never thought of leaving Vrindavan. Another time, Srimati Radharani and all her, some of her Sakhi friends, they were on a boat on the Manasi Ganga. The boatman was Krishna himself, but he had covered himself with a chador and he was like, you know, you couldn't see his face. So he wanted to have fun with the gopis. So they were going ahead on the boat, and suddenly in the middle of the Manasi Ganga, Krishna stopped rowing the boat. So the gopis said, "Why are you not rowing?" He said, "I'm too tired, I've not eaten for quite some time, you know. I just don't have the strength." So they fed him, you know, yogurt and butter and milk and all that. And then after eating and drinking so much, Krishna went to sleep. He said, "Now I'm too exhausted to ride. You all ride." So the gopis said, and he actually said that if you all want me to continue, you have to massage my hands and legs. Radharani got angry. She said, "If you tell us to massage your hands and legs, we will catch your hands and legs and throw you into the river." And then Krishna got up and he started rowing, you know. After some time, the boat started sinking. There was a small hole in it and water started coming in. So the gopis started panicking. And Krishna said that, you know, the boat is going to sink because there is too much weight. So throw everything that is not needed. So they started throwing the matkas and they started throwing, you know, whatever yogurt and all they got. And then Krishna, the boat was still sinking. Then Krishna said, now you have to throw your jewels also. Too heavy, you know. They threw their jewels. Still the boat was sinking. And then Krishna said, now you have to throw your cloth also. The gopis, Radharani got angry. She said, we'll beat you up, we will throw you. The weight will reduce completely. Huh? And then Krishna just kept quiet and he continued rowing. And after some point, you know, Krishna created a special effect. You know, there was a thunderstorm, lightning, all that. And the gopis were really fearful. And then the boat started shaking, you know. And then Srimati Radharani, she was so scared that she went and caught the boatman. She embraced him. And as soon as she embraced him, she realized that this has to be Krishna. The gopis, the other gopis, they didn't understand what happened. They said, come on, how are you embracing a boatman? Radharani removed his flute and showed them. And that's when they all realized that this is Krishna himself. So, Krishna has also performed unlimited pastimes on the banks of Ganga, at least on Manasi Ganga, in this way. Ganga Devi comes on a crocodile. The crocodile is not the crocodile of this world, not the regular type. It's a white color crocodile. And the crocodile represents something very interesting from our perspective. Gajendra, the elephant, was caught by a crocodile. And the crocodile, actually, the jaws of the crocodile represent the jaws of Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord that can grip us, hold us in her grip. But Ganga, if you notice, she sits on the crocodile and the crocodile helps her travel from place to place. So Maya, for a person who is against Krishna, against the concept of Krishna consciousness, crocodile opens his mouth, catches the person and drags the person. But for somebody who takes shelter of Ganga, takes shelter of Krishna, the same crocodile transports a person from one place to another, from the material world to the spiritual world. So, in the Mahabharata also we find this story of a crocodile. When Dronacharya was in the water swimming, the Kauravas and the Pandavas, they were, you know, having a bath, and their teacher was swimming, and suddenly Dronacharya started screaming, and they realized that Dronacharya has been caught by a crocodile. And as soon as Dronacharya started screaming, he started shouting, please help me, please help me. He could have rescued himself, but he wanted to see which of his disciples actually, you know, is interested in helping him. Immediately Arjun, you know, jumped into action and he shot 5 arrows and he killed the crocodile. Then Dronacharya, he blessed Arjun with that he would become the best archer in the world. So basically, the crocodile represents unexpected entry into our life of something that is disastrous. So crocodile, the secret of a crocodile is that it appears out of nowhere. If you knew that a crocodile is waiting there, why would you go there? So many people who have been eaten by crocodiles or who have been captured by crocodiles, they have been captured because they don't know that a crocodile is there. That is the secret of the crocodile. And that is the secret of Maya. You don't know when she will open her mouth. It seems to be silent log. Suddenly it opens her mouth such a way that it practically devour you. That's how Maya attacks. Silently but swiftly. And how do you resist Maya's attacks? By making her, by not poking her the wrong place, but rather by taking shelter of Krishna, then Maya doesn't come to attack us, but rather she comes to transport us. So from Mahamaya, she becomes Yogamaya. So essentially, Ganga teaches us 7 things. The first thing that Ganga teaches us is contemplation. Many things in this world are placed around us to make us contemplate our actions. Rivers why do we say every river is holy? Why do we say the sun is holy? Why do we say the moon is holy? Why do we say, you know, so many things around us are respectable and holy? The reason we say they are holy is because they all are representations of Krishna. And any representation of Dharma, any representation of the Supreme Lord is meant for us to remember our actions. Remember what is our role. Remember when we are deviating. So basically, anytime you see Ganga, don't think that I'm going to, you know, have a bath in the Ganga so that I get purified. Yes, that will happen. But when you take a bath in the Ganga, you have to remember all the wrong that you have done. So Ganga is actually any instrument of Dharma is actually a chance for contemplation. So when you have another Ganga bath, it's another chance for you to contemplate on your actions. Rather than thinking, this is a chance for me to purify my sinful actions. So the more we contemplate, the more we remain pure, the more we remain careful of our actions. So the first thing that Ganga teaches us is contemplate. The second thing that Ganga teaches us is depth, which means that life, most people live on a superficial level. But actually, on a superficial level, no life exists. We study the river Ganga. On the surface level, nothing exists. No flora, no fauna, nothing exists on a surface level. Everything exists deep. So as long as we have superficial lifestyles, superficial desires, superficial goals in life, we can achieve nothing. We will just flow away. But the moment you think of going deeper into the essence of life, there is a lot waiting for you to be revealed, for you to learn, for you to understand, for you to realize. The third thing that the Ganga teaches us is how everything in this world is cyclic. The Ganga goes into the ocean. From the ocean, the water goes into the clouds. From the clouds, the water comes down on the mountains. From the mountains, the water comes down back as rivers, and then it goes back into the ocean. Everything in life is cyclic. When we understand the cyclic nature of life, we understand that there is every possibility of undoing the wrong that we did in the past. But at the same time, we also should understand that there is a reaction to every wrong that we did in the past, waiting for us. Right now, we may not be in the phase where we can see the reaction. But when the cycle changes, you will face the reaction. At the same time, when you see it from another perspective, the cycle just tells you that there is hope of purification. There is hope of rectification. There is hope for repentance. The third thing that the Ganga teaches us is determination. Come what may, whatever obstacles come on her path, she will reach the ocean. The ocean represents the love of God. Like the river, if you have decided that you are going to reach the ocean, come what may, you will reach it. Ganga, if you see the flow of the Ganga, sometimes rocks come in between, sometimes trees come in between, sometimes mountains come in between. Ganga has her way to find over, under, around, somehow or the other. There is a place in Bihar, which is known as Munger. Can you imagine the determination of Ganga? There, she goes northwards. She wants to reach the sea, which is south. But at that particular point, because she doesn't have a path to go, she goes northwards, and then another place she takes a turn and goes down. Can you imagine what is the desperation of Ganga to reach the ocean? So, we can learn determination from her. If you have determination, all the obstacles that come on your path, you will be able to overcome. The fifth thing that we learn from Mother Ganga is accommodation. In her, there is unlimited variety. But at the same time, there is peaceful unity. So within her, she encompasses so much. That means one should learn to accommodate people of different varieties and different concepts into one's life. At the same time, one should be ready to accommodate different cultures and different value systems in one's life, as long as they are all conducive for you to reach your goal. So many times, we as practitioners of Bhakti Yoga, we tend to become exclusivists also, where we cannot handle slight variety, you know. We want everything to be stereotyped in one way only. So when you look at the essence and not focus on the externals, you'll be able to accommodate. Srila Prabhupada wanted a world, wanted a society in which the entire world can live in peacefully. So this is what Ganga represents. And then Ganga represents vibration. Why is Mother Ganga so pure? Of course she is so pure because she is descended from the spiritual world. Of course she is so pure because she has connection with Krishna, with Lord Shiva, with Brahmaji, and so many personalities. But she is also so pure because on her path, right from the top till the ocean, all across her path, there have been so many great personalities that have been performing intense tapasya around her. The tapasya of these exalted personalities has actually created such a vibration around that river. If you go to any part of Ganga, anywhere in India, you'll find such intense purity and such intense vibrations that you have to be convinced that this cannot be an ordinary place. This cannot be an ordinary river. That's what Mother Ganga represents. And finally, Mother Ganga, she represents connection. Our connection with the Supreme Lord, our connection with the Guru Parampara, our connection with understanding the fact that we cannot handle her directly because she is too powerful. So when we handle her, the mantra, when we handle the mantra, when it comes down in the series, in disciplic succession, it comes down to us in a way that we can digest and handle. So Mother Ganga represents connection in a way that we can handle the flow of Mother Ganga at our level. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ganga Mata ki jai.